Welcome to Health Cetera's podcast. Over the last few decades, significant medical advancements have been made to improve the chances of survival and healthy development for premature babies. Premature, or preterm infants, are those born before 37 weeks of gestation, and those few weeks of fetal development are proving to be critical. Research is revealing a correlation between premature birth and various health conditions as these preterm babies age, with effects being observed well throughout adulthood. On this Health Cetera podcast, Diana Mason, registered nurse and host of this program, invites Dr. Michelle Kelly, a nurse practitioner and associate professor of nursing at Villanova University's College of Nursing, to discuss what preterm babies are, what medical advancements have been made to help improve their survival, and how their early births may put them at risk for health conditions as they age. This podcast first aired on Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio on January 5th, 2022.
So when fetuses cannot be carried to term, we refer to them as premature or preterm babies when they are born. Advances in medicine over the last four decades have really improved the odds that very premature, low birth weight infants can survive. We've known that preterm infants may struggle developmentally during childhood, but with good health and educational supports, they can actually thrive. However, some evidence is suggesting that adults who were preterm infants may be at higher risk for other health problems as adults. And recently, I was at Villanova University and heard Dr. Michelle Kelly, an associate professor of nursing at the School of Nursing there, talk about this, and I'd never heard about this. And so I said, you've got to come on Health Cetera in the Catskills and talk about this. Michelle, thank you so much for being with us today on Health Cetera in the Catskills.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Diana.
So you were correcting some of my language, too, because I, in the 80s and 90s in particular, there was a whole lot of discussion about low birth weight infants and very low birth weight infants. And you corrected me and said the language now is really preterm. So what do we mean by preterm infants?
Well, Diana, it's funny that you say about the 80s and the 90s, because I was an undergrad nurse in the 90s and became a nurse practitioner in the late 90s. And low birth weight and, you know, measuring children by their birth weight was really what we did. Now, as science has evolved and as research has evolved, we really recognize that it's not – the size is important. And we don't want to discount that, but it's really the length of gestation that matters most. Mm-hmm. So someone who is born preterm is born before the completion of 37 weeks of gestation. So, the March of Dimes has an effort. They call it the full 40. And it's a big push to get, pregnancies and women, if at all possible, to continue a pregnancy for the full 40. Because really there is a reason and a need for that continued development.
Well,
development happens over time, and there are critical stages in development. Most babies who are born preterm are born between 32 and 36 weeks of gestation. So, you know, in the 90s, early 2000s, we really considered those kids as almost close enough. We didn't worry about them quite so much. And it was the kids, the infants that were born at less than 32 weeks, less than 28 weeks, those are really the kids we focused a lot on. Less than 2% of preterm babies are born less than 32 weeks of gestation. So it's really a very small number that are those micro preemies or real small preemies that we, that catch the media attention and that, you know, is what is called to mind when, the average person talks about a baby that's born premature. They see this very small baby in a very complex medical environment. And while a lot of them are there, that for sure, we also have to focus on that the bigger chunk of people born preterm, those babies that are born between 32 and 36 weeks. Because what science has told us and you know, medical technology has told us that although they have a really great survival rate, almost 95% in developed and high-resource countries, you know, survival rates of preterm birth are really quite astounding compared to what they were 40 years ago.
So now talk about what happens, though. What's left to develop? What are the problems that are created when an infant can't go, when a fetus can't go to 37 weeks?
So the biggest hurdle is respiratory. Mm-hmm. So babies that are born earlier than 34 weeks, they don't have something called surfactant. Mm-hmm. And in the 90s, we figured out how to manufacture an artificial surfactant. And what surfactant looks like dishwashing liquid, mm-hmm. and it overcomes surface tension. So it allows the lung to stay inflated. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that naturally, we have to work really hard to keep those lungs inflated. Mm-hmm. For the people of more mature era in the audience, Patrick Kennedy was born in 1963. He was the infant of JFK and Jackie. Patrick died at 2 days of age from respiratory lung disease, and we think he was probably 34 weeks.
Wow.
But we didn't have surfactant. We didn't have ventilators small enough in the U.S. to manage the respiratory component of prematurity. We've gotten so much better in the 50-plus years since he was born, and he would have a 95 to 98% survival rate today.
Interesting. You know, the other thing that occurs to me is the advances that we continue to make in how to take care of these preterm infants, even beyond the respiratory. I can remember the day when, you know, there was no shielding of, no simulation of night and day for the infants. There was no, they were in light all the time. They were getting touched and handled all the time. And there was recently something on social media, I believe, or an article that I read that where the reporter went with the mother who had a preterm infant, and they were very preterm, and they were talking about how they organized care now to really not keep handling the infant and bother stimulating the infant that infant needed organized rest. Talk about some of those advances that have really made a difference in the outcomes, initially at least, of these preterm infants.
So that falls solidly within the realm of nursing care. And nurses really pioneered that developmental care. And we use the word developmental care or clustered care, where you really try and do everything that you need to do to an infant that's in an isolette, which is, you know, the incubator, where we're keeping that baby in a warm, little bit moist environment, trying to mimic the womb in ways that we can, while still providing nutrition and heat and warmth and respiratory support. So there are periods of time where you handle the child. And then there are periods of time where we call it draping down or covering over. And we actually put darker blankets over the isolette itself to be a visual barrier so that medical students and residents and people walking by recognize that we're not touching this baby during this time. It's connected to the monitor where the nurse is monitoring what's happening within. But we're really trying very hard to keep that environment as calm and as noise-free. There are stoplights in NICUs.
Wow.
And And that's a noise monitor. So, you know, if the noise level in the room gets to be too high, the stoplight will change and really is a visual reminder for the rest of us to bring our voices down, to silence our alarms, to do things that really help limit that overstimulation. One of the best things that that can be done is something called kangaroo care, mm-hmm. and that's literally taking this newborn infant and putting it skin to skin with either mother or the father. So tubes, ventilator, wires, all of it come along, and you put this very fragile baby on the parent's chest, wrapped over, you know, skin to skin, wrapped over with a blanket. And we see that the children's heart rate regulates. They're very stable during that time. And that's really something that can be done in any type of environment. So even in countries and areas of the world where we don't have the technology that we do here, that's a mechanism, a way to keep the child warm and safe. Now, the child has to be able to breathe on their own in those, you know, in areas where we don't have ventilation. But here, we can do that even while the child's on a ventilator. Mm-hmm. We can get that. NICU nurses and nurse practitioners and physicians are skilled at moving that baby to where it needs to be. And the parent has to commit to sit there for quite a while because we're not going to move them once we get them there. Yeah. But it's parents love it because it's a time of true bonding for the parent and the child. And that's really important.
Now, I do want to get to the adult aspect of this, but I recall the day when, you know, the parents could maybe visit, maybe touch the baby, and that has been another shift, is my understanding, that
Absolutely.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
So, you know, the history of neonatology is fascinating. It goes all the way back to the World's Fairs, where babies that they were a sideshow. Incubator babies were actually brought to the World's Fair. You know, a family has a baby that's born early. They don't have the way to take care of it. They bring it to the World's Fair, and the world gawked at it. They paid admission to gawk at this baby. So we've gone from sideshow, attraction to that very restrictive time in the 80s, early 90s, where parents were only allowed into the NICU during certain times. They were never there during a resuscitation. You know, it was very restrictive. And now we've swung to a stage where a lot of NICUs are single rooms. So it's an individual room that parent can stay at the bedside as much as they would like or are able to. They can be a part of care. They can be a part, as the child gets more stable, they can really take part in learning to feed a preterm infant. It is a skill set that is, you know, they need more support than a child that would be born at term. They need to learn how to suck, swallow, and breathe all at the same time. So we really need parents to be in the NICU and to bond with their child and to learn how to take care of them safely. So we really encourage them to be there as much as they can, particularly as the infant gets closer to discharge.
Geez, it sounds like another good reason why we need paid family and medical leave in this country.
Don't get me started on that one.
I know. Yes.
Because the family who is a dual-income family that doesn't have family leave, how do they do that if their child is born early?
Yeah.
I spoke with a family member of a police officer, and I don't remember where the police officer worked, but it was a nursing student of mine talking about how her family member had delivered early, and she knew she was only going to get 8 weeks of paid family leave, paid time off, and she couldn't figure out whether to take the time. She had a C-section. And she couldn't figure out, does she take the time now to recover herself as a mom, you know, or as a woman from the surgery she just had, or does she try and go back to work early so that she has a few weeks when the baby eventually comes home from the hospital?
Wow. Wow. What a choice to have to make. Yeah.
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 Well, so we're talking with Dr. Michelle Kelly, an associate professor of nursing at Villanova University, about preterm infants. And now I want to shift to what happens to them as adults. So we know that with all these supports, both in terms of immediate care as well as long-term supports from schools and from developmental specialists, et cetera, that the kids can thrive. But you're finding that there are health problems that are emerging in adulthood. Talk to us about this.
So, you know, as a pediatric and a neonatal nurse practitioner, adults are not really my target population. however, what I have realized over time is that the children that I cared for 25, you know, 30 years ago, they're adults now. And as the ability to carry out long-term research and to really follow what is happening with them long-term, as that literature has evolved, what we've found is that individuals who are born preterm are at increased risk for very specific but very common health conditions. So, and this increased risk is conferred whether you were born at 28 weeks or whether you were born at 33 weeks.
Interesting.
So more risk the younger you are, but 35-weekers, 34-weekers, they don't escape from this risk. And some of the things that we've identified are things like cardiovascular disease and hypertension, respiratory conditions, so restrictive respiratory conditions particularly, and those that are born preterm are actually at increased risk for all mental health diagnoses, particularly anxiety and depression. But some of the research does say that they are at increased risk for all mental health diagnoses. Mm-hmm. So the really important piece of this is that these are conditions that are common across the United States. They're common to a lot of adults. As you get to a certain age, you have an increased risk of hypertension. Obesity increases your risk. And there are things that we know that increase risk. What the individual who was born preterm and the people who care for them as adults need to understand is that those that were born preterm are at increased risk for each of those conditions. Mm-hmm. So
above and beyond the general population.
Above and beyond the general population. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that all of those risks are modifiable, right? I can't change the fact that you were born preterm, just like I can't change the fact that you have a family history of cardiac disease, mm-hmm. right? But if I, as a part of the healthcare team, as a nurse practitioner, if I was seeing you and you said to me that you were born preterm and you were borderline hypertensive and you're a little bit overweight and we're adding up our risk factors, I'm going to include preterm birth as one of those risk factors, as an additive risk factor. So I'm going to recommend lifestyle modifications. I'm going to recommend that you lose a little weight. I'm going to recommend that you increase your physical activity. But if I was on the fence between whether or not to start a treatment or not, maybe adding that additional risk factor of understanding that you were born preterm, maybe that encourages me to start antihypertensive medications a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. Because we have more risk, and I know that because I understand that preterm birth confers that risk.
So I have a sense, though, that there are very few. I have never, ever been asked about my birth weight, was I carried to term, in all of my healthcare encounters, at least in my recollection. I think there are probably very few healthcare providers who ask that question.
You are absolutely correct.
So, given that, I mean, obviously, the solution here is that somebody who is an adult who was a preterm birth should let their health care provider, particularly their primary care provider, know that this is so. But when they say that, the provider may wonder, why are they telling me this?
Exactly. This is exactly the situation we're in right now. So, myself, the RODI study team, the APIC group, which is the Adult Born Preterm International Collaborative, there was an NIH conference held in 2017 that codified the health risks for adults born preterm. I may be one of 12 people who have read that executive summary. However, the take-home point from that executive summary is that we need to educate providers about the importance of preterm health risk. So, you know, it's sort of a three-pronged approach. We need to educate new providers and existing providers. I was educated in the late 90s, I was told that children born preterm catch up by the time they're two, or they're not gonna, and that their health issues are largely irrelevant by the time they hit preschool. So that is why you have never been asked if you were born preterm. Wow. It's why people that were born preterm, when they leave their pediatrician, who knew that they were born preterm, are never asked again.
Interesting.
If they are not physically medically complex, so if they don't still have a tracheostomy scar or, you know, are in a wheelchair or have some developmental delay, adult providers don't ask the question. And so there's an education piece there for the provider. Mm-hmm. There's an education piece there for the individual themselves who were born preterm, that they almost need to come armed with mm-hmm. a couple of citations and resources mm-hmm. For their providers who don't know that this what this means. And there needs to be a change in public policy as well, healthcare policy, so that we follow individuals who are born preterm a little more closely. Mm. In most states right now, reflexive early intervention, which means automatic referral to early intervention, stops at about 30 weeks. Wow. So if you were born after 30 weeks and you had a relatively uneventful course, you were never connected to early intervention. Mm. So no one is following you with that intent in mind. So, you know, those are sort of that three-prong approach that needs to happen.
So, Michelle, we are almost out of time. And for people who are adults and were preterm, or for parents who may feel like, oh, I need to keep a close eye on this and I need to, you know, make sure that my children who were premature know about this, what would you refer them to? What resources are available?
So there are a couple. I've had the distinct pleasure to meet and speak with the adults that were born preterm themselves that were the founding members of the Adult Preemie Advocacy Network. Their website is www.adultpreemies.com.
One more time.
www.adultpreemies.com.
P-R-E-M-I-E-S or P-R-E-E-I-M-E-S?
P-R-E-M-I-E-S.
Adultpreemies.com, okay.
Mm-hmm. They have a social media presence. They have this website as well. And it's a place for adults who were born preterm to connect.
Great.
They also have links on their website to research opportunities, so some long-term research follow-up that's ongoing that individuals who were born preterm can jump into. You can read some of my recommendations. I wrote the first set of recommendations for primary care providers to address preterm birth history for individuals that were born preterm across the lifespan, so from post-NICU through adulthood. There's a ton of research published by the Rohde study,
but
where
do we find your publication?
Google me. You can, or on my website at Villanova University. So if you Google Michelle Kelly, Villanova University, they're listed there.
Great.
And there are a lot of people that are working on this, and
great.
We are really encouraged and hoping to get the message out.
Great. Well, you do a great job of getting the message out, and I really appreciate you coming on to Health Cetera in the Catskills today, Michelle. We've been talking with Michelle Kelly, Associate Professor of Nursing and Nurse Practitioner at Villanova University School of Nursing. Thank you so much, Michelle. Excellent information.
You're very welcome.
All right. Have a great day.
You too, Diana.
Yeah, good stuff. And again, that website, if you want more information, adultpremies.com, adultpremies, all one word. And Google. Go to Villanova University School of Nursing and look up Michelle Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, and look at her publications, and you'll find that publication she was talking about.
You've been listening to a podcast of Health Cetera in the Catskills. For more podcasts and discussions of important health issues and policies affecting health, go to Health Cetera's website and blog at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's www.healthmediapolicy.com. This podcast was produced by Dr. Diana Mason and production assistant Kai Volsey.